and Sultan Bayezid's great mosque in Bursa ground to a halt, and the Sultan put them to death. Others say Constantinople, Istanbul, always had its Karagoz and Hasavat, even in the days of the Roman empires. Some think that the pair of them are offshoots of an ancient wisdom, dressed in a corrupted version of the licensed finery of the Sufi and the shaman and the bard. In the semi-ruinous cafe, they are worked by an Armenian, who is a mimic and comedian rolled up in a newspaper, a 5, 6, even 7 tasseled puppeteer. His is a very old wandering profession. Over the years, he has been in Hungary, setting garrisons in a roar, or in Egypt, raising a pasha's smile. He has carried his cutouts, lamp, and little screen to Iraq and the Crimea, to the neighborhood of Venice in the army's van, and with the fleets to Algiers. The cook's tourists have been told to watch for his scurrilous takeoff of a foreigner speaking Turkish. The orchestra wails and squeaks. The Armenian ladies giggle. The children squirm, and a constant supply of coffee cups moves about the room, borne by Circassian youths in the good old costume, which is baggy trousers, waistcoats, and coils of coloured linen piled on their shaven heads. This book is about a people who do not exist. The word Ottoman does not describe a place. Nobody nowadays speaks their language. Only a few professors can begin to understand their poetry. "We have no classics," snapped a Turkish poet in 1964 at a poetry symposium in Sofia, when asked to acquaint the group with examples of classical Ottoman verse. For 600 years, the Ottoman Empire swelled and declined. It advanced from a dusty beylik in the foothills of Anatolia at the start of the 14th century to conquer the relics and successors of Byzantium, including the entire Balkan Peninsula from the Adriatic to the Black Sea, Greece, Serbia, Bulgaria, and the so-called principalities of Wallachia and Moldavia, north of the Danube. It took Anatolia. The submission of the Crimean Tatars in the 15th century, along with the capture of Constantinople in 1453, completed its control of the Black Sea. In 1517, it swept up the heartlands of Islam, Syria, Arabia, and Egypt, along with the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, controlling the thoroughfares which linked Europe to the Middle East. The Ottoman Empire stretched from the Danube to the Nile. The empire in those years was Islamic, martial, civilized, and tolerant. To those who lived outside its boundaries, in lands known by Islamic custom as Dar ul Harb, abode of war, it was an irritant and a terror. To its own subject peoples, however, it belonged in the Dar ul Islam, or abode of peace, and was such a prodigy of pep, so vigorous and so well ordered, such a miracle of human ingenuity, that contemporaries felt it was helped into being by powers not quite human, diabolical, or divine, depending on their point of view. But at the start of the 17th century, the Ottomans faltered. The Mediterranean Sea was relegated to second division status. The Islamic spirit seemed to stagnate. The nations of the West were querulous and disunited, but their very squabbles proved vigorous and progressive. In the Ottoman, Islamic world, the battles were already won, the arguments suppressed. The law was written, and the Ottomans cleaved ever more rigidly to the past in a spirit of narcissistic pride. For the next 300 years, the empire defied prognostications of its imminent collapse. Fractious and ramshackle, its politics riddled with corruption, its purposes furred by sloth, it was a miracle of a kind too, a prodigy of decay. It had become like an old body, crazed through with many vices, which remain when the youth and strength is decayed, wrote Sir Thomas Rowe in 1621.